The next case is 96-2511, Catherine Chubb versus the Ohio Bureau of Workers' Compensation. Mr. Gordon. I'd like to ask a threshold question. As I understand the Court of Appeals opinion, the matter is returned to the board, SPBR, to determine whether there was a fiduciary relationship between your client and her supervisor. If the factual, so it's going back on a factual determination, which the Court of Appeals felt we didn't have, wasn't in the record, or needed to be made. If that determination was that there was no fiduciary relationship, in other words, that despite the statements in the record that this was an unclassified position, that actually it was not, then the waiver issue is moot, is it not? We don't need the waiver or estoppel issue to decide the ultimate.
If it is determined that on the view of the evidence as the nature of her position as to whether that is classified or unclassified upon hearing, there's never been a hearing in this case before. If it is determined that she was within the classified service, then the Court of Appeals has directed the board, and reversing Judge Connolly to go, to determine whether or not the record also shows that she knowingly and voluntarily engaged in some act or conduct that would constitute a waiver on her part of those protections. If her duties are as performed, the record shows that she's placed into the unclassified service, and she will be an employee at will. I would agree with that proposition. But in this instance, our contention is that the record will show that she was in the classified service, and the issue for determination by the board should be limited to, as Judge Conner reversing the board's dismissal of her complaint, as to whether or not there was good cause. information. And the issue as to whether or not there was any form of waiver on her part is not triable, it's not subject to, cannot be interposed by the state agency. And this result those defenses are not available is rooted in the constitutional provisions of the state of Ohio, found in Article 15, Section 10, the constitutional amendment directing the legislature to enact laws to establish a civil service. That civil service was established in direct response to the constitutional amendment, mandating that to protect that civil service employees in the classified service be protected in their positions of employment. The constitutional amendment was intended to do away with the patronage system that had been used and prior thereto it was enacted to or adopted to do away with and terminate the spoil system that was prevalent throughout the state. Therefore, a state public policy established to give classified employees the protection of their job.
Well, we know that. I guess what I'm trying to get to is whether the status of this case is such that we need to decide the legal issue before there is a determination of what the facts are in the case. If the case has gone back for a factual determination, and we could decide the legal issue, certainly, but I'm not certain that it necessarily needs to be decided. Let me ask it this way. Do you think that the legal issue needs to be decided here, regardless of what the factual determination is at the board? Judicial economy, maybe?
Judicial economy, which was referred to in the preceding argument, to the extent that if it is found that she is, and it's a firm contention that she was, in fact, a classified employee, the same issue is then going to be presented to that to the Board of Review. Is it going to consider whether or not, as directed by the Court of Appeals, or should be would by virtue of the Court of Appeals decision on the remand, it would decide the case. This court does not decide the issue by applying the issue as to whether or not there was a waiver of sovereignty.
I understand your argument. So let me ask you one other further question. As I read your brief, it seems to me you are saying that waiver or estoppel should never apply in these cases. Is that my accurate?
Yes,
wouldn't that be a rather harsh rule? I mean, it seems to me there are always some situations where we may want to apply it.
Our contention is that no valid interest is served by recognizing waiver or estoppel as a defense to the claim for wrongful termination of a classified employee. If the employee is properly performing the duties of his office or her office, she has a constitutional and legislative right to that tenure. If she is not performing the duties as required by that office, and her supervisor or employers feel that she is not performing, they will fire her and give her the opportunity to review on appeal as to whether or not there was just cause for her termination. If the firing agency, if the state agency has proven to be correct in its assessment of her service, she'll be out of the job. But there's no reason to compromise that right by providing the state with an opportunity to extract a waiver from an employee who has a tenured position, and later on to pull that waiver out of the pocket.
You use the term extract, but as I read the brief, I don't see that sounds like almost an order or a forcing. In this case, she had a job offer, did she not? She had a job offer to go to another division.
Yes, she did.
And her boss came to her and said, hey, you're a valued employee. I want to give you a raise, but I don't have a spot, so I got to take it from this other position. You you aren't covered, you aren't civil service, but you can stay here and get a raise. And she wasn't, she had a choice.
No, I withdraw the word extract, but she was placed in the position by the supervisor who accommodated his effort to, or his agreement to provide her with a raise in pay, found the administrative slot to, which to, as he told her, temporarily assign her to, have her assigned to, for the purpose of affecting that pay raise. But she didn't have anything to do with it.
Oh, yes, she could have said, I'll stay where I am, could she not? Could she have said, I'll stay where I am, I won't take a pay raise, I'll stay where I am?
She wasn't, it was not presented to her as though she was, that she had any...
And she had the choice of going to the other job, or she still had?
No, it was not presented to her, Your Honor, as I understand the record, as proffered. He said, this is the way I'm doing it for you. It's a temporary basis. She didn't say, this is, do you want to do it this way? She was not presented with any offer or...
So you're saying she was forced to take the pay raise?
She wasn't forced to. She was, it was presented to her.
She had options, did she not?
Did she have an option? I think that the employer said to her, this is the way I am handling the situation for you. So I don't think that was presented as an option.
She was never told during, this whole thing that we are now going to put you in the unclassified service when you've been in a classified service, was she?
That is correct.
Not the way I read it.
That's correct. There was never any discussion with respect to the issue whatsoever. It didn't arise after her termination. The issue was created by the administrative law judge.
And obviously you're dealing with the state agency here and the power of the state and against an individual, and obviously the bargaining positions are somewhat unequal. My problem is with this, and I'd like to know what your response to it is. And I have some empathy with your position and her plight, but she's a lawyer. And she signed an agreement that clearly says, I recognize that my position is not in a classified service. How do we get around that?
That was stated in a parenthetical clause to the agreement.
It was paragraph 3 of the agreement.
Paragraph 3. Parenthetically,
do we charge her with a higher standard?
Her current position. That was by classification, as she understood it from her, as had been explained to her at the time she received the raise. That was, I believe, intended to only reflect merely by definition or the assignment. It's merely a carryover, exact the same situation as it existed at the time she received the increase in pay.
So you're just saying it's a codification or a recitation of the fact as it existed?
Yes, Your Honor.
Not that she had agreed to it as a change in her classified position.
That's right, that she was merely being carried at that position, at that administration.
I guess it could be read that way.
I'd like to suggest to the court,
on this whole subject, really, the decision of the Court of Appeals, did that mean, because there has been no evidentiary hearing, it needs to go back for a hearing to determine, although the evidence in the record now, according to the Court of Appeals, doesn't show that there was a knowing and voluntary waiver of the classified service, that this has yet to be determined as a factual matter.
Well, the Court of Appeals directed that remand, on remand, that issue was to be considered. Judge Conner directed, whose decision was reversed, ordered the Court of Appeals not to reach that issue because that goes to the question of waiver.
Right.
And as I...
Yeah, there's a legal issue interposed there. Should the legal issue be determined by this court that that's a legitimate defense, then it's still an issue of fact that we won't, we don't have this.
No, but the issue, as I stated to, as I stated, if the, it's found that she is in the classified service, invariably that issue will arise. And certainly the board would review the guidance from the court on handling it. Otherwise, it will be abide by the decision of the Court of Appeals and consider that issue. And so there's a strong possibility in the event that the circumstances might evolve that the same issue would be brought back before the court. Now, this issue is an important issue and requires resolution by this court. It's something that has never been decided by the court and warrants the earnest consideration by the court. I'd like to reserve about 1 minute.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Gordon. Mr. Decker.
Thank you, Chief Justice. Please, the court, here on behalf of your workers' compensation. At the outset, I'd like to point out that the record we're dealing with is one of several documents that were proffered on behalf of Ms. Chubb on objection she filed to the report recommendation that the hearing officer of the state personnel board review. There's never been a hearing. The state has never had the opportunity to present evidence regarding the circumstances surrounding either her acceptance of the position of the administrative staff position from which she was discharged, nor has she had the opportunity in the hearing to present evidence about the circumstances surrounding the formation of the settlement agreement and whether paragraph 3 of the agreement is fairly characterizable as it appears as one of the elements of consideration in forming that settlement agreement.
From your record, do you have evidence that will support a just cause dismissal?
No, there has been no hearing of any sort. I would also like to point out that even if there were evidence supporting a just cause dismissal, we would, if board found the employee was in reclassified service and that waiver or estoppel did not apply and the settlement agreement in this case did not apply, then even if the state did have just cause to dismiss Ms. Chubb, the board would disaffirm that dismissal because the state did not follow the procedures applicable to dismissing a classified civil servant. It didn't give her the 124-34 so that the state would be liable for 3 or 4 years of back pay. At that juncture, the state might, no doubt, does have just cause to dismiss her based on her misuse of computer equipment and so forth and so on, which enabled us to re-discharge her as a classified employee, but that was not a result of that pay issue.
If you had that evidence, why wouldn't you, out of an abundance of caution, have gone through the 124 dismissal procedure?
The reason I speculate was that the agency decided not to dismiss it, but rather entered into a settlement agreement that Ms. Chubb is trying to avoid in this case. And even though we've been talking about waiving the agreement we're referring to looks for all the world like the same sort of settlement agreement that is enforced all over the state with respect to all kinds of statutory and constitutional rights. Being forfeited, and if Ms. Chubb had been discharged and entered into an agreement like this on the doorsteps of the personnel board review immediately prior to the hearing about her just cause discharge and entered into an agreement such as the one before you, I don't think that there would be any question that such an agreement would be valid. We have all kinds of public policies in the state. She's relying on one but we certainly have one favor in the voluntary resolution of employment dispute. And it's impossible to conclude on record that that settlement agreement is anything but such a voluntary resolution of an employment dispute, which was entered into prior to the action being taken rather than after. Again, no reasons suggested by Ms. Chubb or any parent of us why the state did not enter into such settlements prior to taking the adverse action.
From what is this court to do with the late formalization of that agreement? I take it your argument is that it was unclassified at the time you settled this dispute, but the 5 months delay in signing it for the exam, that it wasn't the Court of Appeals.
I don't think there was a 5 months delay in signing the agreement. I don't think that's a fair characterization. The point, the dispute over whether it was discovered after Ms. Chubb accepted the administrative staff position that she had engaged in certain misconduct involving use of time and equipment to pursue a loan track. At that juncture, the parties entered into the settlement agreement that the state agreed not to discharge Ms. Chubb to suspend her for 20 days. She agreed she was in unclassified service, serving her further service would be at the will of the employer. Now, what the Court of Appeals said about this is a little confusing to me, and you can read it two ways. I think they may have been saying that the settlement agreement is not dispositive of her knowledge that she was taking an unclassified position 5 months earlier because the settlement agreement was entered into 5 months later. I think that's what you're talking about. I'm not sure whether the Court of Appeals addressed at all whether the settlement agreement standing alone could be an independent waiver of the right to a claim of classified status. It's one way to read their opinion is they simply do not address that.
I'd like to go back to the waiver
of
estoppel issue. You argue in your brief that there should be a waiver because she had these options and she willingly took this job and got the benefit of the pay rate. But I think counsel makes a good point that maybe there should be a stop because did not the state also benefit? I mean, you had a valued employee. The boss didn't want to lose her. He was trying to nag some way to keep her doing the same job. Why shouldn't she still have the same protections when the state benefited by making this agreement?
I don't know of any principle that makes either waiver or estoppel inapplicable simply because both parties benefit. As a matter of fact, it seems to me that waiver is kind of a contract that requires both parties consideration of when.
Could you argue that the Congress, that the state waived its right to when she wasn't classified because they wanted to keep her and the same job or the same duties, just give her a little more money? Could you argue the waiver against the state?
I think you can make that argument. I think that if you start pulling waiver against the state on that large scale, you run into another problem with changing civil service system from a system of laws to a system of men, so to speak. But I do not believe that the state should be stopped from. We've got another public policy here. We have a line drawn by the legislature between the classified and the unclassified service. And if one looks at the case law, that line is necessarily fuzzy. There's a big gray area that results in lots of controversies over how you make calls in an individual situation. And it seems to me that the public benefits from having in individual cases certainty by having an agreement between the employer and the employee. Yes, this position is classified. No, this one isn't. that reason, I think the board should lean towards enforcing agreements that are made about accepting a position. When the agreement concerns its classified or unclassified status.
Wait a minute. The employer, the state and the employee don't agree on whether they're classified or unclassified. You're put in position X and it's in the statute, this is classified. If you're put in Y, it's unclassified. There's no give and take on, am I going to be in the unclassified or classified, is there? Not all the years I've seen it.
The state initially designates positions classified or unclassified.
Sure, it does.
Particularly in the 12411 statute that's involved here. Whether that designation is correct is going to be reviewed after the fact. After something else at first happens to the employee and they deal with board review, then after the fact, the board will look at whether that designation was correct. And the employee has the right, ordinarily, to introduce evidence to show that his duties placed him in the classified service, notwithstanding the designation. My point is...
Well, can it be the other way around?
Does that option exist to the state as well? You're told that you're in the classified and suddenly somebody later decides it's not.
I'm sorry, Judge. I have never seen a case in nearly 20 years
so that's
in which the board has not basically stopped the state from its own designation. We have to at least inform the employee beforehand.
So those cases all involve an employee saying, look, in effect,
I was designated. But these designations involve a great deal of judgment, and because of the employee's ability after the fact to challenge the correctness of that designation and the uncertainty of the outcome in individual cases, you have a somewhat unstable system. In public policy, it seems public good would be served, assuming the system were not abused in a widespread way. To abolish the classified service, public good would be served by knowing beforehand, because of an agreement between the employer and the employee, that the position would be under.
How did this lawyer's duties change?
Attorney 3 to an administrative staff position, she has represented to the board that her duties did not change at all. And with the sole reason for the quote promotion to administrative staff was to affect the pay raise and dissuade her from accepting another position.
And at this point, there's nothing in the record to
controvert that. That the state has not had an opportunity to do so.
Mr. Blake, if you read the, if you analyze the settlement as a
matter of your attention, please. The settlement has turned off the ladder.
If you analyze that agreement, if you analyze that agreement as settlement of a disciplinary action, the leader. The agreement which says I acknowledge I'm unclassified. Can that be challenged by an evidentiary look at the actual duties of an employee? The employee can say, well, I know I said I would be unclassified, but again, I'd like to have an evidentiary hearing about my duties and show that I didn't really fit the unclassified service?
No. I think the only circumstance in which the employee would attempt to vacate or to defeat the settlement agreement under such along those lines might be to show that after she entered into the settlement agreement, her duties changed drastically. But I don't think that she would show that because my duties were in fact within the classified service at the time I entered into the agreement, you should disregard my representations. they were classified.
If they, but it's, okay, why would it, you're just saying to accept the agreement as a condition of continued employment to be termed unclassified, whatever you're doing, even if you're clearly doing duties that would be the most obvious of classified duties, no fiduciary, no.
I believe that parties should embark in virtually all of the contexts involving constitutional rights, federal statutory rights regarding discrimination, and any other context entitled to enter into voluntary arms-length settlement agreements with the government. And there's nothing suggested about the nature of one's third-party beneficiary rights to being in classified service that distinguishes this case from all of those others, specifically the Sherry case out of the Sixth Circuit. I can see that my time is not expired about.
Your voice is about to expire, I think, isn't it?
Yes, yeah. I hear that I won't get any water for a while. Thank you for your
time. Thank you, Mr. Decker. Mr. Gordon, you've saved about 30 seconds of your time.
There's a public policy in Ohio that encourages disputants to enter into settlement agreements of disputes. The settlement agrees that such a policy exists. But that policy cannot override the agreement entered, agreement of settlement of a dispute, certainly cannot enforce the provision in the agreement that is itself against public policy, cannot be enforced. That's what this appeal is all about. And the
you say it would be against public policy.
If that portion of the agreement, which is a clause which is against public policy, would be unenforceable and upon repetition of the policy as being unwaverable, if the provision with respect to classification, if the
cannot
be seized upon by the state as constituting waiver because it's against the public policy of the state.
We permit defendants to waive constitutional rights.
I understand, but
why is this a higher right for purposes of the waiver than
that waiver is acceptable because this is a fundamental policy right mandated by the Constitution. Civil service, classified civil service employees are conferred tenure, and that right is immutable and that should not.
So a person cannot agree to give up those rights if they wish to in their individual instance.
As I understood counsel's argument, the agreement between the agreement might be entered into between the state and the employee, recognizing that the position is in the unclassified service. That cannot be immutable. The fact is that the job of duty performed by the employee squarely, conclusively, and undeniably placed that employee within the classified civil service. That agreement is unenforceable, and it's never ending. It will not be recognized. It would not be recognized by this court under the current decisions, because the court looks to the nature of the duties actually being performed by the employee. And this, the public policy against waiver of that policy overrides all those considerations.
If the state decides to give certain employees a life insurance policy, for example, as a part of the compensation, if you will, of the office, we could not waive that. We would have to take that policy, right? We couldn't say, okay, statute says you're entitled to it. Here are your rights, but we could not say. The public employee cannot say, I refuse to accept that. Why would we put that sort of restriction on a person's right to...
By relinquishing my entitlement to the protections of the civil service, I would say that the state could not do that. And where the effect of the proposed agreement is to result in a waiver of those rights.
What's the public policy in restricting an individual's right to determine what's best for them? Recognize that we're not going to change the statute. Everybody else has the same rights, but an individual decides what's best for me is to not have X benefit. What's public policy is served by that?
Chief Justice, I think that's commonly that's what motivates an employee during the course of employment to make an agreement, because he feels that in doing so, he's continuing his employment, his family is otherwise at risk, and so he voluntarily he goes ahead and signs the agreement when it's always against his best interest to do so. And that interest is protected. It's protected by the civil service and the constitutional mandate that job is tenured. And the state ought not to be permitted to engage in negotiations with the employee that result in the waiver of those rights.
Thank you, Mr. Gordon. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. We'll take a brief recess.
All rise.